WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Kate Wolbert has attracted attention for her short stories. In fact, her debut novel, The Gardens of Kyoto, is based on one of her short stories that won a Pushcart and an O. Henry Prize. Book critic Maureen Corrigan says that, like O. Henry, Wolbert has a literary knack for sad surprises.
There's an arrestingly wistful atmosphere to Kate Wolbert's first novel, The Gardens of Kyoto. Like so many other American novels, consciously or not, hers looks to the American novel, The Great Gatsby, for inspiration. In this case, Nick Carraway's signature tone of regret is transposed to the voice of a middle-aged woman named Ellen, one of three sisters who came of age during World War II. Of course, World War II is a hot subject for books and movies right now. But what's different about Wolbert's small story is that it focuses on the lasting damage done to those who only stand and wait. The women, like Ellen, whose lives were blown to smithereens, either because the men they loved returned as hopelessly damaged goods or never came home at all. In the first paragraph of The Gardens of Kyoto, Ellen abruptly introduces herself by announcing, "I had a cousin, Randall, killed on Iwo Jima. Have I told you? The last man killed on the island, they said. Killed after the fighting had ceased and the rest of the soldiers had already been transported away to hospitals or to body bags. Killed mopping up. That's what they called it, a mopping up operation." That's what this memorable novel is, too. A decades-long mopping-up operation by a woman too weary to notice that she's missing spots, going around in circles, just pushing dust around without really doing any cleaning. Ellen begins her story by telling us about the first time she remembers meeting Randall. It was an Easter visit with her parents and sisters. She and Randall were both teenagers. Randall's mother died young, and he and his father Sterling, an amateur Jonathan Edwards scholar who shares the great Puritan preacher's gloomy disposition, live in isolation on Maryland's eastern shore in a cavernous house that was once a way station for escaped slaves. On that visit, Randall takes Ellen into the slave's secret hiding hole that he's discovered in the house. Or was that another visit? Readers quickly catch on that Ellen's memory is unreliable, sometimes more wishful than precise. Her hypnotic account of her growing romantic attachment to Randall, who goes off to war while he's still a teenaged beanpole, is interspersed with purely imagined recollections of his mother's life, as well as stories about the famed Gardens of Kyoto in Japan, a place that obsessed Randall. By the time the novel ends, readers also catch on to something else, that the entire story is a dramatic monologue structured around three unwanted pregnancies, and Ellen has been declaiming her confessions not to us, but to her most cherished confidant. We readers are only mere eavesdroppers, stand-ins, rubberneckers at the accidents of fate that befall relative strangers. The Gardens of Kyoto contains a few chapters I wish Wolbert had weeded out. A life-altering meeting where three important characters lock eyes for the first and only time seems forced. And the section where Ellen remembers her student days in the 1950s at a women's college is the same old, serving up reheated references to polite dating practices and MRS degrees. But there's a whispery, ghostly quality to the novel as a whole that excuses its momentary weaknesses. Towards the end of the story, Ellen, as she frequently does, describes one of the gardens of Kyoto. This one, she says, is meant to be viewed at night, in shadows. The entire thing, the pathways, the fountains, the lakes, the cherry trees, is an illusion. Colorless shadows without scent cast by large paper cutouts. A scene set from a drama created by the emperor's gardeners, specifically to his wishes. Changed for the seasons, rearranged. Bare trees for trees in full bloom, lakes with frothy waves, blossoms far too large to grow in that climate. The image of that particular garden offers a pretty good metaphor for the novel itself. Some parts are obviously fake, but the overall effect is haunting.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed The Gardens of Kyoto by Kate Walbert.